Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
At first glance, the title Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence might sound like some kind of a joke. And actually, if you look at the group, it is hard to take them seriously. A group of gay men who dress as nuns, clown paint the nuns' habits, and they put on vulgar displays. They're well known in Los Angeles and elsewhere in California, and they were invited by the Los Angeles Dodgers to receive an award at their Pride Night. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers Pride Night and the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Peachy Keenan, a married mother of 5 children in Southern California, senior contributor to The Federalist and a contributing editor for The American Mind. She's author of the new book, Domestic Extremist, A Practical Guide to Winning the Culture War, and a recent column titled Foul Ball, LA Catholics Declare Victory Over the Perpetually Indulged. Peachy, welcome back.
Hi, thank you so much.
Why does this group of cross-dressing men mock the Catholic Church, this group that call themselves the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence?
This is a group of gay men who are basically drag performers. They've been around for a long time in San Francisco. And, you know, they claim this mantle of civic hero duty because they do like ministry in AIDS hospices and for, you know, AIDS patients, which is great. That's wonderful they do that. But because of their, you know, political stance on these issues, they have vilified and made their main enemy in life is the Catholic Church, because Catholics believe that the sanctity of marriage, man and a woman, and one of the bedrock beliefs is that people should be chaste unless it's within marriage. So living the gay lifestyle doesn't really fit into devout Catholicism. And so they interpret that as homophobia, as hatred to them, directed at them. And so they've devoted much of their free time to mocking and really blaspheming a religion that they feel like is the villain, is the enemy to be destroyed. And we've seen videos they put on shows outdoors for all to see of basically men in G-strings twerking on, you know, men dressed like Jesus, literally on a crucifix and dancing and really doing these sort of like pornographic strip shows, X-rated, in fact, using Jesus and these symbols of Catholicism as props to mock, to despoil. And they're hoping, I guess, through this to kind of inspire each other, like, no, they're the villain. We're living our lives. We're great. We're without sin. How dare you judge us? How dare you make us feel bad about our lifestyle? So that's really what that group is all about.
So the story goes back a little bit here. Give us the story on their involvement in the Los Angeles Dodgers Pride Night.
Yeah, I mean, the sisters somehow this year became these honorees during Pride Month, no longer a day, now it's a month or maybe a summer even. And the Dodgers sort of like decided to give them a Community Hero Award for their work with AIDS patients. Word leaked out and people realized, oh, wow, the Dodgers have had Pride Night in their stadium for over 10 years. Every Major League Baseball team has a Pride Night, I think, except for like the Texas Rangers. And no one ever objected. No one ever cared. I was never even aware that this was happening, because they want to have one night where they give out like a rainbow pin or whatever. Like, fine, that's totally, you know, no one's really like going to get excited about this. But with this specific group, it was really about, not that they were gay, it was just about really that they're walking around, these men, these kind of middle-aged, you know, men with this white clown makeup on, like juggalo style makeup, wearing nuns' habits, like literally dressed like sisters, like old-fashioned religious sisters. And they are openly promoting a lifestyle that is, it's very sex-focused. And so that in itself is like just like a spit in the face of Catholicism. And so the Dodgers giving them a Community Hero Award, like we should look up to these men. We should be grateful to these men. How wonderful. The Dodgers, this kind of came out. The Dodgers pulled back. And then obviously the Pride activists jumped on them and twisted their arms, and the Dodgers invited them back. And then that was it. And we were no longer able to protest. And they've just persisted because the Dodgers, and like every big corporation now, they're much more afraid of their most vocal, angry constituency than they are of their like normal consumer base. The Dodgers consumer base is heavily Hispanic. It's families, longtime Dodger fans, you know, it's all American, it's baseball, right? But they listen only to the loudest voices, the most militant voices, and those are coming from the far left. And those are the people they're afraid of. They live in fear. CEOs live in fear of being called bigots. Like, that's the worst thing you could ever do to them. And so they went ahead with this ceremony. And of course, I went to the protest. And it was very interesting that the Dodgers, I think, rightly were scared. And so they buried the ceremony. They presented the award to these sisters. There were two of them there in full nun habits on the field of Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. But they held the ceremony an hour before the game started. So there was like no one there, which I thought was hilarious.
Was there any official reaction from the Catholic Church?
The official Catholic Church statement came out. I think they issued two statements basically condemning the sisters as a blasphemous group. And they urged Catholics to pray about it, to say the litany in like kind of reparations for this sort of sin being committed at Dodger Stadium in public against Catholicism. And that was it. So they kind of verbally condemned it and then urged everyone to pray and that we should all be kind of unified, have unity. But this is the key. So they paid lip service to, you know, the devout Catholics who were appalled by this. But really, I like to judge them by their actions. And here's what they did. They originally, there was going to be the protest at Dodger Stadium. There was a prayerful, peaceful protest being held the afternoon of Pride Night. The organizers had decided to have a peaceful procession from the cathedral in downtown Los Angeles, the mile and a half to the stadium. And they envisioned just, you know, a lot of people very prayerfully, very peacefully walking to Dodger Stadium. But what that would require is the archdiocese letting people use their parking lot. I've been to this cathedral. They have a massive underground parking lot, fits probably thousands of cars. The archdiocese refused. They refused to allow the marchers to use their parking lot, which meant there could be no procession, which meant that the archdiocese, you know, kind of dodged a bullet. Then basically at the protest itself, or the peaceful, it was really a prayer rally. It was just speakers praying on stage and people were on their knees, praying the rosary, praying the litanies, waving signs of Jesus. It was like the most beautiful expression of public religious faith that I've really ever seen in Los Angeles. It felt much more devout actually than going to mass in downtown Los Angeles at the cathedral. But it was very notable that there was not a single priest from the archdiocese there. There was no bishop, no cardinal, no representative of the archdiocese set foot at the protest, which I think tells you everything you need to know.
Why do you think the Los Angeles Archdiocese gave this kind of absolute minimum reaction to what the Catholic faithful there in Southern California considered to be blasphemous behavior?
Yeah, I mean, I have for a long time, you know, I'm a convert to Catholicism. I didn't know any of this stuff when I first became Catholic. I just assumed every Catholic, especially the bishops and the cardinals, would be completely traditional and completely devout and like want everyone to believe all the same things. So I remember being shocked when I found out that actually, no, if you're a conservative Catholic, if you sometimes dare to go to, let's say, a traditional Latin mass, if you think that priests should not be openly gay, all this stuff, that really puts you on the outs of the institution itself. You're not really welcome. And I mean, we can see kind of all comes down from the top. I sometimes get in trouble among Catholic friends for criticizing Pope Francis. He's to the left of Joe Biden, I mean, in my mind. He's a politician. He's extremely devout on certain issues. But here, the attitude seems to be, and among the vast majority of the Catholic hierarchy here in the United States, they're very liberal. They're woke as heck. And they do not ever want to be seen as being judgmental. They're very much peace and love. We accept you how you are. Everything is fine. Live your life the way you want. And like Pope Francis's famous words, who am I to judge? And so because of that, because of their reluctance, their fear of being seen as these kind of mean guys, judging people for their living their lifestyle, they were unwilling, unable to offer their most devout base, their, you know, the people they should be wooing, they were unable to offer them any real support.
In a broader context, Peachy, why are ordinary parents like yourself considered essentially a hate group by the ruling elite in California?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the same thing as being Catholic here. If you dare to have more than two children, if you want to have a say in their education, if you don't want them to learn these far left educational theories like critical race theory, or you don't want them feeling bad about their race, being called oppressors, if you don't want them learning about that there's more than two genders, you're dangerous. You're a danger to your children. You're not going along with the program. And so, I mean, that's why I call my book Domestic Extremist. The joke is that I'm not a domestic extremist. I'm just extremely domestic. You know, I want to have a big family and protect my family. But that makes you, ironically, an extremist in the eyes of the officials and the schools who want to get their claws into your kids. I mean, that we see that over and over again, you know, the Pride Parade in New York City, where you had all these transgender men, women, I don't know what they are, shouting, we're coming for your children. And they say they were just kidding, but like, we know they're not. If you walk into any public kindergarten in the Los Angeles school district, you will see a classroom filled with rainbows and the children's new pronouns that they're all trying out. I mean, this is happening in kindergarten and even younger than that. So in fact, they are coming for your children. And if you say no, you are the problem.
Do you think opinion is shifting on Pride, the displays, the celebrations? And if so, why?
For the first time that I can remember, there has been a significant pushback, not just among super devout, super conservative people who can like be dismissed, you know, as, oh, they're just fanatics. They're just religious fanatics. This is the first year I've seen actually really centrist people, normal people, the normies, pushing back on it and saying, you know, I really don't want little kids to be encouraged to dress head to toe in rainbow gear. I don't want my child going down that path. I don't want my child confused. I think people are finally feeling empowered to stand up and say, you know, no, that there's a line I have to draw. I mean, we saw that with Bud Light. I think people voted with their drinking habits there. And we're seeing it with Target. We're seeing it with Disney. The new Disney Pixar movie Elemental, it was a huge disaster. And the head of their DEI, their studio, was just fired. Why did the movie lose all this money? Well, they had to put a non-binary cartoon character, little kid, in the movie. What is that? And it all goes back to this idea of grooming. The left likes to say, well, why are you calling them groomers? You know, they're not, drag queens aren't molesting people. Transgender women aren't molesting people. It's not about molesting. I'm not worried that like the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are going to like try to touch my child. Okay. That's not my fear. What people are calling the grooming is really a psychological grooming. The grooming is making this normal, making Baroque new gender identities and pronouns, making that okay for little kids to explore and to know about. And no, just because you were born with a penis, that doesn't make you a boy. And like telling that to a little boy is unbelievably confusing and unbelievably psychologically damaging. I mean, obviously. And so people have finally figured this out, I think. And that is where the kind of big pushback is coming. And I think next year, Pride is going to look a lot different.
Why do you think that LGBTQ activists are overplaying their hand?
I think that they're just kind of taking the natural progression, the natural, you know, next step, which is they operate in a world where their political ideology at all times has to be going, you know, pedal to the metal. At all times, their feet are on the gas pedal, going as fast as they can, because the faster you push, the more you push through, then the things that were like considered taboo last week, well, now those things are normal and the new thing is taboo. But if you just keep pushing, just speed through ahead, then the things that seemed crazy are now, those seem normal by comparison. So they're always trying to push the Overton window further and further and further and further, because then that makes everything else fine. And they don't see people. They never saw anyone stand up for this. They've gotten victory after victory after victory for decades. No one wanted to push back. People are scared. You, like I said, being called a bigot is like the worst thing you can say to someone, and people will cower in terror. If you get dinged with that, you're a homophobe, you're a transphobe, your life is over. You lose your friends, you lose your job. People are really scared. And so I think that this, finally this time when they came for the kids, now I think people are like, well, now I don't care. I'm not afraid anymore. You're not taking my kids.
Peachy Keenan is a married mother of five children in Southern California, senior contributor for The Federalist and a contributing editor to The American Mind, author of the new book, Domestic Extremist, A Practical Guide to Winning the Culture War, and a recent column titled Foul Ball, L.A. Catholics Declare Victory Over the Perpetually Indulged. You can read it and purchase Domestic Extremist at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Peachy, thanks.
Thank you so much.
We will be responding to your unanswered Bible questions with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller right after the break.
This is Molly Hemingway, encouraging you to listen to my favorite podcast, Issues, Etc. Every day you get in-depth interviews with host Todd Wilkin asking expert guests substantive, thought-provoking questions on all of the important news and issues of our day. The expert guests are in culture, law, ethics, philosophy, theology, and apologetics. Expert guests, expansive topics, always extolling Christ. Issues, Etc.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Memoria Press is a family-run publisher of classical Christian education materials for homeschools and private schools. Every page of the Memoria Press curriculum leads students to a mastery of content, an understanding of the classical heritage of the Christian West, and an appreciation of truth, goodness, and beauty. If you're interested in learning more, visit memoriapress.com and use the coupon code LPR23. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. memoriapress.com.
Register today. The 2023 Lutherans for Life National Conference is October 11th through the 13th at the Holiday Inn Cincinnati Airport in Erlanger, Kentucky. The conference includes visits to the Ark Encounter and Creation Museum. Online registration is open now with early bird pricing at lutheransforlife.org/conference. Lutherans for Life, equipping Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. lutheransforlife.org.